Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello, fellow dirty minds. Hey, Sandra Doherty here. Oh, we've got quite a show for you today. We being me and maybe a few friends. Hey, so first off, I've got some food for thought around media literacy, TV, what we see on TV, how we feel about it, how it's affecting our young people and the young people those young people are going to give birth to, etc., and so on throughout time, as we do. I had a great time with Dr. Logan. It was a quick interview, but it was a solid interview, and I hadn't spent any one-on-one time with her. I'd met her at a conference, and it was just so great. And then at the end, because she had to go pick up her kids from school, and I had to run off to a trapeze class of all things. Yes, a few wonderful listeners, one in particular, but apparently they'd gotten other coworkers into the show as well. There is a group of sex nerds in New York City that are trapeze teachers. So I ran off right after this wearing more spandex than usual to fly through the air in the hands of these trusting people, and I just had such a great time. So thank you, you guys. I still remember. I appreciate it. Then we go to Miss Monica Moon. Monica is part of the Nerdist Industries family, and she was wonderful enough to come on and chat about the kind of sex we would like to see on TV, etc., etc. And I got to talk about the show that I think that really, really, really needs to have sex in it. That makes me sad, etc. There was fist shaking, but you can't see that because this is a podcast. I'm shaking my fist right now. You can't see it. It's so frustrating. Man, when are your ears going to grow eyes? God. Okay, anyway, so, yes. But before we get into this week's show, I would first like to thank AdamandEve.com for sponsoring this week's episode. Hey, check out their spread. Go to AdamandEve.com, and if you find something that makes you really happy, you purchase that sucker. But remember to type in SexNerd at checkout, because that way you can score free shipping, 3 free DVDs, a free gift, and, oh yeah, get 50% off with the promo code. You gotta type it in, SexNerd. Hey, clone a willy kit. Who doesn't like to clone their willy if you have a willy or have a friend with a willy? So you can totally do that. Make a dildo for your beloved. Perfect for long-distance relationships or making, bridging that gap from your pants to your mouth. I don't judge. The applications of the clone a willy kit are endless. I think it's like $45. Anyway, but you only get 50% off that clone a willy kit if you type in promo code SEXNERD for free shipping, 3 free DVDs, a free gift, and 50% off almost any item in the store. Sweet deal, my friends. Sweet deal. There is so much conversation around sex on television. I actually really appreciate sex on television. I do think that the stuff I was exposed to when I was a kid, I didn't really know how to process it. And so I wish I had had someone to go, hey, how do you feel about that? That seems interesting. Well, you know, what do you think that's about? Or I wish somebody had helped me handle all the intense sexuality that I was being exposed to, just in ads and different things. But, you know, alas, we live, we learn, we procreate. I have had this one pet peeve, though, around sex scenes in movies and TV. And it's around O faces and pleasure faces. It really, really annoys me when someone is like, ooh, we're making out. And then the person's head like goes below frame. And the minute they leave the frame, suddenly the person supposedly receiving pleasure is just writhing in ecstasy, like, oh my God. Or like, oh my God. Whatever that sound is. I'm not going to make the sound for you. You know the sound, you naughty monkeys. Okay, so I lost my train of thought because I was thinking about that and monkeys. Weird. So to me, I have lived a lifetime of seeing, it just in my gut, it just didn't feel like an honest, like acting would be great. I would totally be lost in the story. And then the minute the sexy stuff happens, it's like even the actors are not quite comfortable with what's going on. Like I just, so often I do not feel it. But I will say that, and I am a total fan of Masters of Sex. When I commit, I really commit to a show, and man, am I into it. There is this moment when Michael Sheen, who plays Dr. Masters, one of the title characters, he's having sex, and I'll talk later in this episode about Masters of Sex more, but there's a moment where his face is so in pleasure, but in that dirty, ooh, there's just that moment. And I feel uncomfortable seeing that moment. I felt But just seeing that honest, raw, not, you know, it's not pretty and perfect. It's like, ooh, it's animal. Anyway, that was just such a wonderful moment where I almost wanted to look away because it was so personal. That moment, then I thought it was just me, but then they kept using it in the preview clips for like the next and next and next episode. Like last time on Masters of Sex, and then they'd show the O face thing again, and I'd be like, oh, I guess they were pretty impressed by that face too, because you never see that on TV. That's my thing. I just, it was honest. I like it. I just, sex on TV, it can be really great, you know? Also coming up later this month, I will be in San Francisco at San Francisco Sketch Fest, just going around. But then on January 27th at Good Vibes, I will have a class, yes, on boning, boning 101. Although it has been remarked to me after class that it's really not 101, it's like all the things, but it's just a wonderful foundational class of all the sex. So come out, it's $20 to $25, sign up online to save a few bucks, goodvibes.com, and then I'll be back in LA at the Pleasure Chest teaching blowjobs and beyond on January 29th. But for now, I love you guys, enjoy the show.
To the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Hey, sexy people. Sex Nerd Sandra here. You know. We know. We have an understanding. I am with the remarkable and fabulous Dr. Logan Lefkoff. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for talking to me.
I have run down to this fabulous Manhattan apartment to talk about... Is it okay that I mentioned that you live in Manhattan? That's fine. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know how like undercover you are. To talk about sex on TV, because we met at Catalyst Con and you were talking about how... And you had fabulous clips about you on TV kind of... I don't want to say fighting the man, but like bringing the sex ed and the sex positive vibe to the point of view of the people who run TV. And I was fascinated by that. So before we get right into it, just a little bit of your background or what you tend to do. And I know you have a book coming out.
Yes. So I am a PhD. I'm a sex educator through and through. You know, there are a lot of us in the sexology world and all different, you know, forms and formats, but I'm definitely an educator. So I started as a peer HIV and AIDS educator when I was 15, and my parents whipped out two condoms and two bananas and said, this is how you use a condom and you start training next week. And I would have never guessed it would have been my foray into this, but it couldn't have been a better place to start.
Your parents were like, go do this?
Yes, my parents, well, you know, it was the time I grew up in Long Island. You know, it was this weird moment in time where HIV was finally being discussed as an indiscriminate virus. Parents were getting nervous. And they got very involved and they wanted to do some, not just fundraising, but they wanted to do a lot of education. And they were involved with our town's first peer HIV and AIDS training program.
Very cool.
And there I began. So now I implement... design and implement the sex ed programs in a lot of independent schools, organizations. I lecture, I write. I do have this amazing opportunity to play in the media, and I intend to use that privilege for good.
And oh, you're good. You're like a boxer in a ring when you get out there.
Oh, thank you. You know, I have to say I've been afforded these really incredible opportunities in my life. And I really do believe that when you've been given certain privileges, you have to use them for the betterment of society. I mean, that's kind of lofty, but I really do believe that. So, I mean, if I'm not going to go out there and fight for what's right, then, you know, who else is? I mean, hopefully everyone, but you never know.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, let's all fight for what you believe in, guys. It's the message. So what have you, okay. I mean, I know you have a book out, or a book that is coming out. You're co-authoring. You mentioned, what is it called about teens and sex and teens?
Yes. That's usually how it runs in my world. I wrote a new book. It's coming out in April with my friend, who's a physician. Her name is Jenna Wider, and it's called Got Teens, The Doctor Mom's Guide to Sex, social media, and other adolescent realities. And it's basically, we are two moms. We work in the sexual health space and we're fairly transparent with our values. We talk to you like we'd be sitting down at a bar next to you. And she tackles like the medical side of issues and I get to do all the other fun contextual types of things.
Hey, so, I mean, this is perfect because no one's... I want to see someone tackle the social media thing. I mean, because I know somebody who's like 50 would still benefit probably from a book talking to people about how to handle social media. Because most people, it's so new to all of us. So, and it can get awkward and sloppy and messy and just downright awkward. When we flip on our TVs or our Hulu or whatever, are you like up on the like TV shows going on or are you more like in the news and like talk show realm?
I'm pretty much in both spaces, though I have to say the summer has been a nice respite from all of that. But I have a lecture coming up in a few days with a bunch of ninth graders talking about sex and media. So it's still very much in my life all of the time. And they're unfortunately, no matter how exciting TV shows may be, they're just some trends and issues that keep rearing their ugly heads. And I kind of spend my life trying to deconstruct the sexual double standard. And there's nothing worse than like hearing the word slut tossed around in every way, shape, or form. So much so that when you ask an elementary school kid, have they ever heard the word? Yes. You know, the answer is yes. And I think it's that we spend so much time offering all of these mixed messages and trying to empower women, which, by the way, is so important. But this word just, I have trouble getting past it. And I feel like the more we use it, the less kind of sexual equality we get.
So like the slut walk and that sort of thing is not in your... Your point of view is not helpful to the cause.
Well, actually, I mean, I think the concept of slut walk is great. I just really despise the term. And it's not, you know, and there are plenty of critics who say, you know, Logan, kind of get past it. I like the word or I don't like the word. And it's really not so much about that particular, I mean, it is about the word, but I think it's that when you work with young people, that word has one very particular meaning. So as adults, we might be able to interpret it many ways and own it and reclaim it. But young people have a really hard time with it. And if that's where they're starting from, well, you know, you can only imagine how things kind of spiral from there.
Right. It's limited points of view when you're 12.
Limited points of view. And I think that we use it really, unfortunately, we use it to hurt people. And that's where social media gets back. I mean, I don't know. You know, I want my students of any and all genders to feel empowered by their bodies and the choices they make. And to really get to the point where, you know, let's refrain from judging others and let's worry about ourselves and holding ourselves accountable and let other people make their own decisions. We have a really hard time doing that, but it's certainly my goal at the end of the day.
Okay. So ideally, my fantasy world is I go on a news channel and let's say the conversation is about Miley Cyrus or, you know, whatever is happening that day or Tiger Woods or, you know, whatever. And you have all these adults in business casual outfits talking about the news, but I often find that even newscaster types tend to bring a very skewed perception of sexual health and a judginess to topics of the day.
Judginess, yes, that's a fairly appropriate word, especially depending. I mean, depending on the network, depending on the program, but I think it comes from just the way we all learn about sex. You know, we come from a myriad of value systems and backgrounds, and if you're not given a really good, holistic, well-rounded perspective of sexuality growing up, you find yourself in these positions where you don't know anything but to be judgmental. You know, I did one of the first big 50 Shades of Grey, you know, breakout kind of debates. And the journalist said to me right before we went live on air, you know, I find this whole thing disgusting and I'm not okay with it. And I thought, oh, that's nice. Okay. Thanks for setting the tone. And I'm going to challenge some of that. Not that the book and all these other things don't come with other issues, but, open-minded would be nice. Doesn't always happen, but it would be nice. And it's funny because in the conversations about Miley Cyrus, I really find frustrating, A, is that we are surprised by the fact that a young 20-something celebrity would want to kind of figure out how to make sense of their sexuality and put it out there, especially when it's the culture we created, right? I love that we're so horrified. But meanwhile, if we didn't buy into it and love it, it wouldn't exist.
That's a really good point, honestly. I mean, she's kind of figuring herself out in front of us, and we kind of created this monster in a way of how do I give them what they want and also be my own person? And this is really confusing. And blurred lines is a whole thing in itself. Oh, God.
Well, right. And I find that part so fascinating. I would rather focus on the issues of consent and the language and like domesticating women than I would about Miley Cyrus. You know, because it's not like we didn't see it before. We've seen it with Britney. We've seen it with, you know, Christina. I just feel like, you know, oftentimes parents turn on the TV expecting that the TV is going to educate in some way, shape, or form. And the fact is, it's not meant to, right? It's meant to entertain. And as parents, caregivers, aunts, uncles, whatever, it is our responsibility to kind of contextualize that and talk about it and make sense of it. Because I have no problem with my kids seeing that stuff as long as I'm there to ask them, so what do you think about when, you know, a girl is running around half naked on stage? You know, are you okay with that? Are you not okay with that? Because that's where the meaningful conversation comes in. Yelling and screaming isn't really going to do anything at the end of the day.
I really like your head. I like your brain, Logan. May I call you Logan?
You may, of course.
And what about, oh, God, there's this whole, like, the news is so, and then there's politicians, and like there's so much on TV all the time. Like, I don't, my brain shuts down. There's so much. But even like, TV shows, like, are there any positive, like Orange is the New Black? Have you paid attention to the?
Yes, I have to say, I have not seen Orange is the New Black yet. It is on only because I don't have Netflix. I'm living like clearly back somewhere else.
Girl, just get your password from a friend. Just get a password from a friend.
But it is on. It's certainly on my to-do list. And I'm sort of obsessed with Newsroom. I'm not going to lie. Yes. Okay. I mean, but, you know, the truth is I find TV shows salacious. I also find them entertaining. But I don't really think anything is bad if it gives you the opportunity to have some really good, meaningful conversations about sexuality, about sexual health, about relationships. Like, am I a huge fan of the Teen Mom series? Oh my God, no. By no means. However, it gives us a great platform to talk about, you know, how and why couples make decisions to become pregnant, about contraception and condoms, about abortion and the fact that we don't see abortion portrayed in the media as frequently as the procedure occurs in real life. And those are really important conversations to have. So even though I might detest the way some of it is portrayed, it does give us a great platform for conversation.
That's true. I will say this. Did you watch Knocked Up several years ago?
Yeah, oh, yes. And it's on like every single day now.
Oh, really? On cable?
Yes.
Okay. I was mad because the abortion option was brushed off so just like, oh, no, no, I wouldn't do that. And then like every life moved on. I'm like, I'm sorry. You're a career woman. And
right. There's no way you wouldn't have said, let me think about it for a minute. And I have to say, I'm glad you brought it up because I feel like that is the one, you know, sometimes it's not just what's in the plot line, but it's also very much what's missing, right? And so that omission is a great start jumping off point. In fact, we're almost at the copy editing stage of our book, and I woke up like in the middle of the night a month ago and said, oh my God, I can't remember if we have a question about abortion or not. And, you know, my co-author and friend's like, oh my God, I hope we did, but if not, we're doing it right now. And, you know, and because it is important, and because regardless of your values, it is an important option to have. And I mean, we've certainly seen sex and reproductive health portrayed just grotesquely in the last year. And honestly, as a parent of both a son and a daughter, it makes my job harder in some ways that this is the world that they're living in, but it also means that I really make a concerted effort every day to talk to them about all the choices that they have in this world.
Can you give me specific examples of the grotesque nature of how it's been portrayed?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, I think just the whittling away of Roe v. Wade. I think it's the way some congressmen speak about women's uteruses as if they know to shut down when a woman is being assaulted. But by the way, you can't get pregnant anyway, apparently. You know, thank you, Todd Akin. There's just such a lack of, I mean, it's blatant ignorance about bodies. And I think back to my own, you know, biology class in high school and in seventh grade. And, you know, I often laugh, like, I know a lot about the male reproductive system, but for some reason, like, we never talked about the clitoris. So there are all these, I think, inequalities and, you know, and hopefully choice is something that's always discussed. I mean, choice is about giving everyone choices, whether that's about sex ed, whether that's about abortion, whether that's about contraception. That's really what it's all about at the end of the day. I mean, I never want to make decisions for someone else, but I want to allow everyone to make the decision that's best for them.
Pro-choice, pro-options.
Pro-choice, pro-options. Yes. Very much so.
Okay. Have you watched Game of Thrones?
No, I haven't watched Game of Thrones. I know. I'm probably one of the few. No.
It's, I'm not judging. No judging.
No, that's okay. No, I have to say, admittedly, I am a reality TV total junkie.
Oh, I don't play in that world. Tell me everything. What do you see?
It's catty and horrible, and I really watch it. I find myself, the reason I love reality TV is because I feel like I'm such a voyeur, and I love to watch how other people interact and see how I might have done it differently. So I really do love it. That being said, I don't think you're going to see me on a docuseries anytime soon, but I find it fascinating. I find what people will do for fame fascinating and horrifying simultaneously. I really do like the reality space.
Have you ever worked in reality TV?
I've tried to avoid a lot of traditional reality TV as a performer personality. There have been a lot of things I have turned down because I feel like that might not be the best place for me. And I love having a public platform to talk about things that are important. You know, but I'm not totally willing to sell my soul in order to do that.
So me as Game of Thrones, Orange is the New Black person, and you as reality TV person, are there any particular shows specifically?
Oh my God, I sound so unintelligent.
No. I mean, it's juicy, juicy stuff. I mean, having been around like TV production for so long, I mean, there was so much producing of that. I mean, it's not actually just raw life. I mean,
And try explaining to a group of teenagers that reality TV isn't reality and it's scripted and it's set up. They're like, no, it's not. It's real. And you say, no, they actually say, you're going to meet here. We want you to discuss this. That everything is kind of created.
Or like how the camera is already ready to catch them walking into a thing that should be a surprise or like that they shouldn't have had a camera there. It wouldn't have made sense.
But that's where media literacy is so important, right? Because people are going to watch a whole lot of crap. The question is, can they decipher what's real from what's fake, from what's meaningful, from what's education or entertainment? Hopefully we raise a generation that can, but you know, certainly the more kind of produced reality we have out there, the more challenging that becomes.
It's wonderful that you have such an eye on the next generation. I feel like so much of my energy is like, hey adults, let's work this out. Wait, like rewind. Like there's so much of just people in the midst of their marriages, in the middle of their dating lives as full-fledged, you know, grown-ass men, etc. And like, we're still trying to figure it out, you know? And so it's funny to try and figure it out for the next generation, yet we're still trying to figure it out for ourselves.
Yeah. When I started in this field, I was working with my own peers, teenagers. And then I went to college and I was working with, you know, certainly more grown-up material. And I was writing about female masturbation and HIV and writing, you know, sex columns long before every campus had one. But I felt like professionally I always started working with youth. So it's much harder to work with adult subjects and then go back and say you want to work with kids and teens, especially if you want to play at all in the media, because the first thing that comes up is going to be the thing you said about vibrators, you know, and then people start to panic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't had any major media blow ups yet. And I'm like, oh, because every sex educator seems to have the story of like, have you had major blow ups
I don't know if I've had, I haven't had blowups. I mean, I kind of know what I'm getting into at this point, and I know when I've made a mistake, or I know when I wish I would have done something differently. I mean, have I lost work because of who I am? Yes.
Like what?
Yes.
Give me juicy stories.
I did this incredible program at an all-girls Catholic school for 4 years. It was breathtaking. They were amazing. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. School was on board. Everyone was on board. One mother who of a child that I did not teach, like was nowhere near this young woman, found out I was there, caused a huge like ruckus, pulled clips of mine that she found on the web that came from segments I was doing about my second book, which was How to Get Your Wife to Have Sex with You, and kind of went batshit and caused such a scene that my program is over.
So oh, that's so sad.
I know. And it's sad, not real. I mean, it's sad for me, but the truth is it's sad for the girls who had so many incredible questions and situations that they found themselves in. And now they have absolutely no intellectual forum to have these conversations, because clearly if that's the parent you have at home, you're not, you know, you're not talking about birth control and consent, you know, or Plan B or buying condoms. Mm-hmm. You're just those conversations are invisible.
Wait a minute, Logan. Are you telling me an all-girls Catholic high school that these girls have some need for sex education? Because to me, they're good girls. They wouldn't, like, they're just going to be praying and stuff, right?
Right. Well, no. And I mean, look, first of all, I'd like to say there's no such thing as the good girl or the bad girl, right? I mean, for me, any of us can be any and all, and sex doesn't make someone good or bad, or the absence of sex of any kind, for that matter. So that's the first thing. And you know, the fact is, I work in a lot of the all boys schools too, and a lot of the co-ed schools, and so, you know, oftentimes I know who these kids are sexually active with. You know, and I'd like to say that they're always thinking about what they learned in my lecture, but you know, teens are teens. So the more information you give them, the better. This idea that if you don't say anything, no one's going to do anything. I mean, it's the old anti-sex ed rant over and over again. So it's really unfortunate. And I would say that that's the only big blow up recently that stems from, you know, who I am or what you could hear me say online or, you know, on TV. But the truth is, if I'm talking about vibrators, or if I'm talking about monogamy or non-monogamy, or if I'm talking about masturbation, the values really are all the same. It's about choice and the potential for pleasure and communication and consent. You know, the message is universal. I've never, ever said anything but this idea that having information and having options are important, and that all of you are going to have different values as it relates to all of these issues. But it's important that at some point you're going to make a decision. You need to have information.
Yes.
Well, other people don't always feel that way, but I do, and I'll keep fighting the good fight.
Oh my God, like power fist to that. Like, yeah. Okay. I want to, before, cause you've got like 2.5 minutes. Okay. Reality TV. We need to get back to this for a second, because if you're watching it, it's fun. It's kind of like mindless voyeurism. You know, you call it voyeurism. Have there been moments in programs that you can think of where you've gotten really angry at the portrayal of sexuality or relationships?
Oh, all the time.
All the time?
All of the time. I mean, we have had mothers and daughters have the most grotesque conversations about sex, specifically the Real Housewives of New Jersey. One of the characters took their daughter to go bra shopping because the little girl wanted to go bra shopping. And she didn't have large breasts. She maybe had breast buds, but they spent the whole time on camera making fun of the fact that she didn't have breasts. I mean, really horrible, horrible stuff. I mean, and the whole, you know, saying to girls, keep your legs shut until you're married. That's, you know, yeah, that's a real helpful conversation to have. So there's plenty.
Is Saint Girls a show?
No, I mean, saying to girls that basically, you know, you can never have sex. And they always use the most god-awful slang for vulvas and vaginas and clitorises. It's really horrible.
Which was the worst?
Oh, God. I can't even remember specifically, but I feel like they're all so juvenile that, you know, it just perpetuates this old message that you're not good enough as you are. You can't own the word. I mean, I really hate the term vajayjay, I'm not going to lie. So any kind of incarnation of that is...
Vagine?
Better than vajayjay. I mean, I hate them all, to be honest with you. But I think that reality TV and even scripted TV, there's a lot of that unhealthy conversation about sex going on. But I use it as an opportunity to write about it or talk about it. So I still feel like it initiates this really good dialogue. So I guess I'm an optimist at the end of the day.
No, I mean, it's great. I mean, it's a lot of fodder for your blog, you know, like it's great. Any examples of positive or healthy relationships or sexualities that you've seen that you've been like pleasantly yes. surprised?
I think that Glee's portrayal of Kurt's relationship with his father, Kurt as a young gay man and his father's support, is breathtaking. You know, and even the idea of Modern Family, all of these new LGBTQ characters and lead characters, you know, that aren't just like the walk-on part for the very special episode of Blossom or whatever it was when I was a kid. I think that those are huge steps in the right direction. Yes, we still deal with some very blatant stereotypes, but we're getting there. We're getting there slowly, but the fact is there's no one definition of family on TV. You know, and that's what I, honestly, that's what I teach my kids, that family is about love. Family isn't about like how many penises or vulvas or, you know, dogs and cats are in a family. Like that's really unimportant.
Yeah. It's never a numbers game, it turns out.
Never. And I guess the best part is when New York State voted, on gay marriage, I had my son stay up all night watching on our computer the live feed of it, and you know I was crying, and it was this incredible moment, and we talked about it, and he looked at me and he said, "I don't understand, why is this a big deal? Like if two people love each other, who cares? Why do we need this?" Yeah.
I remember when Ellen came out on her show so long ago, and I was absolutely like blank in my brain as to why this was important. I was like, yeah. And like, it was the least important thing ever, but it was a huge deal. I remember.
A huge deal. And I think that's,
oh,
it's like chaos. Oh my God. I think this idea that we're raising a new generation of young people who understand that there is not one way to exist really sets this great.
It's not me, right? Okay.
Really sets this great tone for our future. And you know, until I totally age out of the parenting realm, I feel like I really want to use the opportunity to kind of create the next generation of happy and healthy and fulfilled young people in their, you know, with respect to their sexuality, their gender identity, just this idea that they can be whoever they want and that information is powerful and having a voice. And I think that's the most important thing for me, that everyone is entitled to have a voice and they should own their voice and be authentic as it relates to their sexuality. And perhaps if we did that, then we wouldn't have so many issues as adults.
We can dream. We can dream big. Logan, where can everybody find more info on your books, on your work, on sure. all your awesomeness?
I have a website, which is www.loganlevkoff.com. I'm on Twitter at Logan Levkoff. And my new book, Got Teens, will be out in April 2014.
Fantastic. Congratulations on that. And a go team fun. Okay. We win. Hi, Monica Moon.
Hi.
Okay. So we just got through with an interview. Not you. Not me. Us. Not us. But
I was there in spirit.
Well, good. I'm glad. Because now I've got you for this section where, look, here's the thing. For all the sex people complain about media, I'm wondering, what TV shows are you a fan of in your life that you wish there were more sex scenes in? You know, like, I mean, fucking Game of Thrones got all the sex scenes. I feel like Leave It to Beaver maybe needed a couple, you know?
They do have a lot of sex scenes in there. It makes me... I'm one of those people that like I can't really do sex scenes. I like cover my eyes and I hide behind the sofa and I scream until I'm like, tell me when it's over. Ah!
Are you serious? Like with even alone, you're like, yeah. This is.
I get really embarrassed. I'm a 32-year-old that gets really embarrassed when it comes to sex topics. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, so you never wish for more sex scenes?
No, I mean, yeah, pretty much. I'm one of those, like, you know, unrequited love. Ah, wait, is that, that's how you pronounce it, right? Oh my goodness, I sound like such a fob.
It's okay. I question all my pronunciations of words. I question how I pronounce pronunciation. So
it's wrong.
Probably. What are the sex scenes that make you really uncomfortable? All of them? Do any particular come in mind?
Pretty much all of them. I mean, I remember watching like Game of Thrones, and then like seeing like a brothel scene, and I was just like, oh my goodness! And I was watching with my friend, and I was like, this is really uncomfortable.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, because the brothel scenes were like my favorite. Well, I mean, when it was like hot or like random hotness, like I'm like, yeah. Yeah, just yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like innerly like 12, so I'm just like, oh my goodness, that's his butt! Ah! And then I cover my eyes, but then leave a little crack open. You know, it's just. Ah.
I mean, is it that the feeling inside you is so intense of just sort of like there's like what are you feeling in that? Is there fear? Is there just a discomfort? Or what is that?
Yeah, it's probably discomfort, and then like I don't know, it's just like. I'm embarrassed. You know, it's like when someone does something embarrassing on TV and then you run and hide. It's almost the same feeling as that.
I mean, have you watched Masters of Sex?
What? No.
Okay, because I read an article about the writer's room for Masters of Sex, and there was, it's the late 1950s story of the sex researchers, Masters and Johnson, and their frontiering work in the field of sex research. However, there was a decision made before production that there would be no sexy sex scenes. Like, it would all, like, have this quality to them of just this realness of the discomfort around sex, especially at that time, which leads to some... You're looking at me like you're scared. But it leads to some wonderful, because it's in the lab most of the time that they're having sex. But then the innate sexiness of even when it's uncomfortable, like I'll still feel something, but it feels more real. It feels more in touch with like something deeper and human. But this isn't helping at all, is it?
I'm just gathering that I'm stuck in the 50s, apparently. That's, I'm like, oh my goodness. I have the same mentality of probably somebody that lived in the 50s.
Do you ever feel angry about sex on TV? Or how about kisses? How do you feel about kisses?
No, kisses are good. I don't know why. Kisses, like, are okay. Like, I'm totally cool with that. But then when it gets, like, naked time, it's like, oh, my goodness. Oh, ah. And then I go into my turtle shell.
What about sexual tension? Because for me, I can get, like, when there's gratuitous sexuality in a show where I'm like, wow, this is wow. Like,
wow.
It's like True Blood.
Oh, I was going to say, there's scenes where you're like, wow?
Well, like, I'm not like a huge perv. I'm a regular person. But I think it's when shows that I like have that sexual tension or that romantic tension and nothing's happening. Oh, you're clapping.
I like that.
Oh, God, because after a while, I just want to throw something at the screen and be like, fucking kiss her already.
Yes. I'm okay with that. That stuff is, yeah, I'm totally cool with that.
Okay, which ones, like, is there anything particular where that, like, comes to mind?
Well, if we're talking about TV shows, probably, okay, so my favorite show is Once Upon a Time.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's okay because it's like it's the like one of the awesomest, cheesiest shows ever. It's great. I mean, it's great. It has like all the fairy tales coming together and like they incorporate it. I love it so much.
Is this current?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm selective. Like, you know, I did my Game of Thrones thing. I just finished Masters of Sex. You know, I'm trying to catch up a little bit. Did you watch a miniseries many, many years ago called The Tenth Kingdom?
Yes. Yes, that was good too.
What was it, like late 90s? It was like a 10-part miniseries on TV, and it was all the fairy tales combined. I loved that. And there was some sexiness between the guy who played the wolf guy and the main character.
Yes.
And there was, he was really into people stroking his tail and stuff. I was like, this is great. This is just great. Sexual tension. There are some
shows where I'm like angry at how much tension there is, and I want there to be some sex scenes. Which is funny because like Logan Levkoff, who I just had interviewed, was talking about how, you know, you have to help kids process what's on TV. You have to kind of have media literacy to be able to kind of see through how relationships and sex are depicted. Mm. Sometimes I just want to like punch somebody because I just want them to like Benedict Cumberbatch on Sherlock. Did you ever see that series?
No, but he's really hot.
He's totally hot, and he's so angry at everything. And I just want him to, like, make out. And his character is gay in the BBC version. Well, yeah, it's, like, kind of a subtle thing. I think it's been a while, but, like, I was like, come on, dude. Come on, just, come on. Come on.
I've always pictured, like, Sherlock as being asexual.
Not the case, man.
Not the case there, okay.
No, I mean, he's not doing anything about it. It just so happens that there's some references to his orientation being that way. But I think it's when I see a character who's really tense and stressed out and kind of going through some stuff, and I just really want them. I think it's sexual healing. There are certain characters on TV where I want there to be sexual healing on the screen between them and ideally someone that they're a sidekick with, maybe.
It's just like, okay, you guys just need to be locked in a room and I need to put a white shirt on you and throw water on you and it needs to happen.
Yeah, just whatever. Boner City. Anyway. Oh my God, what was I thinking about? Doctor Who. Have you thought about this? Have you noticed? Do you watch Doctor Who?
I only watched the one with Rose.
Good enough.
Yeah, and oh my goodness, it was killing me.
Yeah, right. There's tons of sexual tension there.
Yeah. You're just like, sweet mother of pearls, you need to kiss her, like, now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. There's something slightly wrong to me. Not wrong. I'm sure I'm going to get smacked in the face, my stranger at some point, for saying this. But I want the doctor to express his sexuality. You know, he always plays the, like, innocent one. And, like, I think even with his freaking wife, River Song, which you're not, obviously.
You've ruined it for me.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. I totally did. No.
Actually, yeah. I just watched that portion and then I stopped.
Okay. You work at Nerdist. You've heard things.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Because it's, like, even in their interactions, I'm like, dude, like, it seems like he's asexual even with his wife, and I have nothing against asexuals, but there's just something. Oh, I think because the doctor is usually so charming and it's such like, oh, I mean, I met an asexual who was exceptionally sexy and charming, and I was like, how are you asexual, you're so sexy. But it just, oh, I just want him to hump something sometimes.
Whoa. Oh my goodness, I just ate the mic.
Sorry.
No, I totally understand how you feel. Have you read mangas?
I mean, I have a dirty Japanese comic book.
No, I mean, like, shoujo mangas are the epitome of, like, oh my goodness, I'm going to kill them. They better kiss right now or else I'm going to hurt people. Not kidding you. Japanese are really good with, like, the frustration thing.
Wait, what is a shoujo mango?
Shoujo mango? That's a flavor in ice cream. No. Shoujo mango. Shoujo, I think I'm saying it right. It's girl comic, and then manga's a particular shoujo and shonen. Shonen's the guy, shoujo's the girl.
Okay, cuz I know there's the kind of androgynous guy comics where it's,
they do a lot of gender benders, yeah.
Yeah. And I know that's really big. But no, this is specifically
it's four girls. Uh-huh. So like there's a lot of like the ones where they're talking, they're like, it's just like the guy likes the girl, but the girl doesn't like him back. And then for like 17, 18 chapters, there's this tension.
Oh my God. It's like Lois and Superman. Were you into that show in
the
90s?
Yes. Of course. Anybody who had eyes and saw him, we're totally into that show.
God, yeah, there's something about the love story. Actually, I was obsessed with Smallville for a while, and I just, there was so much tension. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
It's, just make out already. Like, God, like, I was so mad. I mean, although I think there may have been, I don't remember. But yeah, there's, I guess it fuels the imagination though. And that's exciting.
It does. And you know what? I was talking to somebody. I was like, you know, like the brain, I think an imagination is probably one of the most sexiest like parts of your, of because like, you know, I think that can like really trigger a lot of stuff. Like even if, you know, it's like, oh, I don't feel like it. Well, you could probably feel like it if you were to capture it and think about it, you know?
That's true. Actually, I'm feeling like even just thinking about all that tension, I'm like, oh, man, I need to go home and, oh, man, finish this podcast. Oh, oh, man.
By yourself, not with me.
Right, right. Frenzies. Frenzies.
Frenzies.
If you could watch a sex scene between two characters in one of your favorite TV shows, and you had to, which one would it be? Strapped to a chair, Clockwork Orange style.
Ooh. It would probably, oh my goodness. Okay, it would, I forgot their name. Oh no, it would be Veronica and Logan from Veronica Mars. I'm not kidding you. Like, and I'm really, really physical when I watch these shows. I know it sounds weird, but I'm really physical.
I imagined you like rocking back and forth on a couch.
I am. I'm not kidding you. Or I'll be like, ah, and I'll stand up. I'll stand up and I'll be like, ah, but like stomp my feet or run around the sofa or hide behind the sofa or be like, oh my goodness, no, hurry up, I guess. I will be very vocal and very physical when I watch these shows.
We need to watch TV together, Monica Moon. All right. Yeah. Who would I choose if I, well, all of them. Ooh. Yeah, I would, would it be the doctor and Rose Tyler? What would I?
Oh, that's a good one.
My thinking sounds. You like those thinking sounds? Mm-hmm. Ooh.
The facial expressions are better, though. Aww. You guys should see them.
Thanks, YouTube. Someday. Subscribe. Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like I'm past Rose Tyler. It's farther along in my memory. I kind of want to see Matt Smith. And, well, okay, that's totally like breaking some monogamy. So it'd be kind of messed up if it was Amy Pond.
All I'm saying is if you're little wishy-washy about the doctor and Rose, beach scene is all I say.
You mean when there's some goodbyes happening and
yes.
stuff?
Yes.
Well, that's when you're like, oh, yeah, now they're going to maybe bone. I don't know. I don't want to give stuff away if somebody hasn't seen things yet.
Yeah, that right there is, I think that episode right there is just like, ultimate culmination of.
Oh, that's like, to me, that's romantic. Like, that's a romantic intensity. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there's like a physical heat that you can feel between two actors. And I'm just like, just hump them a little or something. Although, hey, you know what? Honestly, just seeing the doctor express his sexuality would be so much fun. But if I ever need my fix of that sort of stuff, I can just watch True Blood. So
I've never watched that, but from what you're telling me, it sounds intense.
I was going to do a animated video project thing with somebody last year. Things happened, but I ended up just watching like all the sex scenes. I just watched all the sex scenes,
like all at once.
Yeah, I just like within a few days, just for fun, just be like, just to understand what vampire sex was like and like werewolf sex, just because I was like, okay, what is this? What can I analyze around this? And it was so much fun. Also, I had to pause a few times. It was really. Anyway, Monica Moon, thank you so much for spending some time. Where can people find you out in the world?
I forgot my Twitter name, but I think it's at MJ Moon. EMJAYMOON.
I'll link it at the Nerdist page.
Yeah, I pretty much suck with social media.
Well, what's your website?
Trust me, you don't want to see it because it's kind of old. It has a picture of me in a suit looking very serious.
You look great. And there are some hot, I'm an Asian girl pictures on there.
Oh, yeah, totally. I totally exploit that whole Asian side of me.
Well, there's a really wonderful range of photos on there. I was like, you know, looking on
there.
Were
you stalking me?
I was preparing for this interview by looking at your face.
Something about that was just creepy.
Oh, it totally was. I could explain it more, but I'm just going to leave it at that. Hey, thanks a lot.
I'm going to lock my doors now.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.